Perspectives on Easter, a 10-10 Thrive special.
Us followed Jesus into Jerusalem on that Sunday of Passover week, when a large crowd celebrated him as their king, expressing their hope that he would bring about the fulfillment of their long-awaited dreams. It was a day of such excitement and rejoicing. But then, things took a turn for the worse. On Monday, Jesus went to the temple in Jerusalem, and we were all appalled by what we saw there. It was loud and chaotic. We could hear the sounds of doves crying, sheep bleating, and cows bellowing. Harried pilgrims were haggling over prices with some of the merchants, while others were gesticulating wildly, trying to attract customers to their stalls. And some people were cursing at the money changers, accusing them of trying to defraud them. Jesus was so filled with anger at the desecration of the holy place that he took some cords and wove them into a small whip. He ran about knocking over the tables of the money changers and spilling coins on the ground. He drove the exchangers out of the area along with the men selling doves and cattle. He also prevented people from using the courtyard as a shortcut, rather than taking a longer route around the complex. As he cleansed the temple of greed and prophet, Jesus quoted from Isaiah 56:7, "My house shall be called a house of prayer, but you make it a den of robbers." The Jewish leaders who questioned Jesus' authority to act this way got very angry. The next day, speaking to a large gathering on the Mount of Olives, Jesus warned us about the signs of the end times, including the destruction of the temple, the rise of false prophets and messiahs, wars and rumors of wars and natural disasters. He also told us that we would also face persecution and martyrdom, and he urged us to remain faithful and vigilant and to persevere through the trials and tribulations. He emphasized the importance of being prepared for his return and living a life of service and obedience to God. This was quite confusing to us, and we didn't really understand it until much later. Later that evening, when a small group of us were gathered in the same house where the disciples would partake of the Last Supper, Jesus told us that in 2 days' time, he would be handed over to be crucified. 2 days later, I was not with him in the upper room when he washed the feet of his disciples and he ate the Passover meal. And I was not with him when he went to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray, and where he was arrested by the religious leaders and Roman guards. However, I learned of what was happening when he was taken to the house of Annas, the former high priest. I was not far from that house, staying in the home of a friend, Susanna. We heard the commotion, and I could hear people shouting the name of Jesus. This is all I needed to hear. I got dressed and I followed the crowd. I could not get into the house, but I could see what was happening from the courtyard. After the cock crew the second time, Jesus was transferred to stand before Caiaphas, the high priest, and before the Sanhedrin, the Jewish council, where he was accused of blasphemy for claiming to be the Son of God. He was then taken to the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, who was responsible for administering justice in Judea at the time. Pilate initially questioned Jesus about the charges brought against him by the Jewish authorities, but found no grounds for conviction. Jesus was then sent to Herod Antipas, the ruler of Galilee, who was in Jerusalem at the time. Herod questioned Jesus, but found no fault in him. Jesus was returned to Pilate, who once again tried to find a way to release him. However, the Jewish leaders and a mob of people demanded that Jesus be crucified, accusing him of inciting rebellion and claiming to be a king. I recognized many of these people as those who had been cheering for Jesus when he rode into Jerusalem on a donkey just a few days earlier. From one sham trial to another, I followed. I caught a brief glimpse of Peter at the house of Annas, and I saw John with Jesus' mother. But beside that, I didn't see any of the other 12 disciples. Each time that a witness lied, and each time that the people called for Jesus to be punished, I was taken aback and staggered a bit. And each time I saw Jesus beaten, or they put that shameful crown of thorns on his head, I was sick to my stomach. I prayed to the Father to send angels to intervene, but no help came. Pilate eventually gave in to the demands of the crowd and sentenced Jesus to be crucified. My dear Lord was mocked, beaten again, and forced to carry his own cross to the place of execution. As he stumbled and struggled along the way, a large number of people followed him. Many of the women, including Joanna, Susanna, and others, mourned and wailed for him as they followed. I pushed my way through the crowd just in time to see Jesus turn and weakly say to us, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children." He continued down this road out of the city to the place of the skull, where he was crucified along two other criminals. I stayed there, not far from Mary and John, and watched. I watched as he forgave those who tormented him. I watched as he told one of the criminals crucified beside him that the man would be granted a place in the heavenly kingdom. I watched as Jesus suffered and as a life slowly drained from him. From time to time, the women who were there would embrace each other, and the tears, they flowed nonstop. Finally, Jesus died on that cross and was buried in a tomb borrowed from the Pharisee Joseph of Arimathea. The next day, throughout the Sabbath, I was restless and anxious. After sunset, I bought spices and perfumes that I determined I would use to anoint the body. Early the next morning, I made my way to the tomb with some of the other women. My heart was still heavy with grief. I was so anxious to get there that I ran ahead of them. When I arrived at the tomb, I found that the stone had been rolled away from the entrance. At first, I was confused, but then I remembered the words that Jesus had spoken to us about how he would rise from the dead on the third day. Could it be? I dared not believe it. I stepped inside the tomb and saw that Jesus' body was no longer there. I was overwhelmed with emotion and began to weep. As I wept, I noticed two angels sitting where Jesus' body had been lying. I was so beside myself that I didn't register how unusual it was for me to encounter these heavenly beings. The angel spoke to me, asking why I was weeping. I told him that Jesus' body was gone, and I didn't know where it had been taken. As I spoke, I heard a voice behind me, and I turned to see a man standing there whom I did not recognize at first. "Woman, why are you weeping? Who are you looking for?" he said. Thinking he was the gardener for the cemetery, I asked if he knew where Jesus' body had been taken. Then he said, "Mary," and I had chills. It was the voice that I knew so well. It was the voice that had forgiven my sins and freed me from my infirmities. It was Jesus. "Teacher," I whispered, and I fell to the ground. Then, overcome with emotion and gratitude, I rushed toward him to embrace him. But he told me not to do so, but to go and tell the others that he had risen from the dead. I ran like I had never run before. All the way back to the city, my heart was overflowing with joy and excitement. I found Peter and the disciples and told them everything that had happened. They were skeptical at first, but when they saw me and heard my words, they knew it was true. That was the beginning of the rest of my life. The day that changed it all for me.